The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I am your host, Hubert Edwards, and this is Guardian AM. Sitting in, and we're going to have ourselves a conversation this morning on a topic, a matter, I think, which is very, very, very important, very relevant, very current to our well-being here in the Bahamas. And I say well-being, I use the word well-being because for the most part, it touches on the lives of youth. And when you impact a youth in any way, positively or negatively, you're effectively shaping the future. And so you want to do that in the first instance in a way which is positive, which is productive, and which is going to deliver future value to the community, to the nation, to the world. But if it just so happened that the action, the things which have been done, creates a negative impact, a negative blowback, a negative socialization, then we can expect that the future is going to be troubled. And so we want to have that conversation about something which you've heard about before. Our guest is here. She has been on the show before. She has been on certainly on the radio, on this particular radio program before. We're going to talk about kind of the exact same issues, but maybe from a, just a different perspective. Let's see if we can eke out something. Because oftentimes we think about the ills of society and how to fix them by looking to others, are looking at what's wrong with others, rather than being calm and carefully and quietly introspecting and asking ourselves the hard, honest conversation, questions as to how I, either by omission or by commission, is part and parcel of the problem. In the Bahamas today, we have some social issues that we are grappling with. And the question I want to pose to you today, is there a conspiracy of silence? Is there a conspiracy of silence? And are you and I actively, because we are actively silent, part and parcel of that problem? To join us today, we have as our guest, Ms. Elizabeth Thompson, and she is the author of this wonderful, very, very, very wonderful book, Ailey Stems the Tide. Welcome back to Guardian Radio, Ms. Thompson. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Hi, good morning, and thank you so much for inviting me. I hope my audio is okay.
I can hear you very well. I trust that our audience does. We want to talk about this very important issue, and that is about child abuse. But I also want to move it to a level where we, each of us, all the persons out there listening, see themselves as an active part of this transaction and not simply an observer. I want to start somewhere which I think is very important. When you endorsed this book to your kids, you said to your four sons, "You are my four stars in my sky who always shine brightly, illuminating my path, keeping me honest, encouraging me, motivating me to be better than the day before. I am in awe of you, thankful to the universe for allowing you to guide me." I wanted to start there because I believe that that last statement really concretize the way we should see and view our children.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us.
Well, I am a mother of four sons. And throughout my life, I have not always understood that that is an awesome responsibility. Mm-hmm. As they have grown over the years, and particularly once I came to the United States, I realized more so that there needs to be an understanding that I am just their guide, and they are also my guide, but in a different way. Much of what I do is informed by them. Even with regard to this book, they were integrally involved in the revisions, in the ideas. As it came from me, they were a part of the process. So I birthed the book like I birthed them, mm-hmm. and they helped to guide me through this process, and still do. And so I think what I am saying there is that I have learned from them in a way that I had not understood that I could, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes absolute sense. If you are a parent and you are not learning, sometimes in very humbling and uncomfortable ways from your children, yes. then obviously you're not actively engaging in them, or at least you're not being honest with yourself. Because, you know, we always take the view that we should tell our kids what to do, what not to do. And we do that sometimes. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we are a little bit hypocritical because we end up kind of doing some of the same things. Do as I say, but not as I do.
And exactly.
Especially at a particular level where that innocence is vibrant and unrestrained. They will check mm-hmm. you sometime. And when they check mm-hmm. you, if you are not honest, you're going to lose some valuable lesson. The corollary to that is, if you are honest and open and being willing to be uncomfortable with your child as a teacher, there's a lot to learn from that interaction.
Yes, yes. And you said it eloquently. It is uncomfortable. It requires us to, and it required me, I should say, to put aside ego and to step into my, or to remember that I too was a child. Mm-hmm. And remember that, you know, they are just, and they have always been, little humans just trying to navigate their world. And if I'm having a hard time as an adult, imagine the time that they are having. And so, as I said, you know, I started off by saying they are males. I'm dealing with four males of Black African descent. Okay. And so I understand that awesome challenge, not only when I lived in the Bahamas, but as well here in the United States. And so I want to always remember that I need to have the porch light on.
Yes.
That's how I try to navigate with them.
And, you know, I'm going to come back and tug at that African experience, or at least the African diaspora experience, in a bit before we get through mm-hmm. this conversation. But I want to jump, before we jump into the story itself and ask you a bit about that, just mm-hmm. going through again, you said to, basically an admonition to parents, mm-hmm. that when your child gets into situation, when they come to you, when they may be molested, somebody touch them inappropriately, speak to them wrongly, whatsoever mm-hmm. the issue, you're saying to them, please really listen, hold them tight, mm-hmm. validate them, believe in them, and act swiftly in their best interests, and yes. importantly, love them even more. Talk to us about yes. how that comes together, because what we are describing, or what we are responding to, is something which is traumatic, and obviously yes. the actions thereof is critical and crucial, and the speed and the urgency with which those play out. Yeah.
Yes, yes. So what I'm going through in that in poem, in many respects, is a process when a traumatized child, and this has, I guess, is informed by my my work as an advocate here in Florida. You start at empathy. You must listen. You must listen with the intent to understand. And you must listen dispassionately, because the person who they may be telling you about may be someone who you hold dear to you. And that's the reason for writing the book in the way I did. Okay, and we see, you know, in the story, just how dear this person, this uncle is, right, to this child who had to then make a decision in her friend's best interest. Yep. And so I go through, yes, we must pay attention, we must listen, we must hold them, because the touch, the aspect of feeling that I'm believed is not only verbal, it's also physical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that validates them. So again, I go through the next step of validation. And then we must act swiftly. So if that means saying to them, listen, I believe you right away, okay? I'm going to make sure that you're never hurt again like this. I'm going to act, doctors, police, the court system, whatever it takes. That's the swift action in their best interest. Yeah. And then we must continue to love them even more, because then there's a period of healing. This is, their innocence has been taken. No child should have been, should have to be touched or should have been touched at an age below the age of consent. No child. I don't care if they're 17.999. They should not be touched inappropriately.
Absolutely not. Well, no, nobody should be touched inappropriately, whether below or after, at no point in time. So yes, but
agreed,
certainly in those very delicate and formative years, you really don't want to have that, because you know you are really invoking violence on the whole existence of that individual.
Agreed. And that type of violence beget violence. So hurt people then go ahead and hurt people. This is, of course, cliche, but it's very true.
Yeah.
You know, if we, this child who's been hurt, and we're hearing the stories now even more so, and they're not new. They may appear new in 2022, but they have been going on from time immemorial. And unfortunately, we seem to have it seems to be unstoppable in our country for some reason. There seems to be some gaps. There are organizations and people working fervently on behalf of children. However, something is missing. And I'm concerned that what may be missing, and part of the reason I wrote my book, is the awareness and the education of the children and of the adults. I cannot believe, and I'm trying hard to believe, or not to believe, that an adult male can look at a child and think it's appropriate to touch that child. It's unspeakable, the violence that's being done to these children.
Yeah.
I just cannot understand. And so we have got to make, we've got to build an awareness campaign. There's so many things that need to be done. But I have been at the other spectrum where I was a prosecutor. That part of it for me, that part of my life is now done. I'm at the stage now where I'm an advocate and I'm looking to empower. Yeah. And those who I think we need to empower right now are the children.
And that is important, because you know, we have to prepare them, because the fact of the matter is,
yes,
that these things are out there, the perps are out there, and they are very serious. You said you can't understand it. I cannot. It's unimaginable to me, myself.
Yes.
But I do understand, as a grown person with some intelligence, that the way you condition your mind to respond to circumstance and to live your life will allow,
yes,
you to do that. You denigrate, mm-hmm, yourself to some of your basis type of instinct, and it will,
yes,
cause you to do that. And I want to use this to kind of a segue and get a little bit into your book. But I want to throw this,
okay,
out to you, Ms. Thompson. There was a recent,
okay,
story, without getting too much into it, where a parent, a male,
mm-hmm,
parent, right, pretty much wreak violence on his daughter,
mm-hmm,
put her in a circumstance which was absolutely very compromising.
Yes.
And if we use that as a proxy of the thinking out there, we then see the value of this book. We then see the value of the actions of Ailey. We then see a mechanism by putting the characters together,
mm-hmm,
where we create a framework to work through how we should respond and react to these circumstances. And I'm going to take you through them because I'm going to take you through some of these issues because I believe that in many instances, right, mm-hmm. while the actions are taking place, it is the larger conspiracy of silence which is causing this to perpetuate and become entrenched, if you will, within the community. Talk to us about your views on that.
Sorry, your question, your statement was talk to us about.
What's your take on that?
Well, yes, there is a conspiracy of silence, so much so that the act, the sexual abuse, the violence against their innocence has become normalized. Mm-hmm. There have been, one of the children asked me when I was reading at Ridgeland Primary, is this a work of fiction? And I said, yes, but I understood that question. I think what I think the child was getting at is, you know, is it true? And because it has happened so often and there's so many stories and innumerable stories of what's been happening in the Bahamas, it has become normalized so much so that this story can be true.
Yeah.
And we've seen the stories in the news about the pastor. Uh-huh. We've seen the story in the news also in the United States here where a gentleman in Georgia, I shouldn't call him a gentleman, an abuser in Georgia raped three generations of his family and got life imprisonment. And they all came forward. Mm-hmm. And so the challenge, I think, conspiracy of silence, yes. One of the ways, and I don't think there's any one way to anything, but the only way, I said it again, one of the paths to assisting our children and assisting the community is to making them more aware and to educating. And I believe we all need alliances in that. The children need alliances. They need alliances with law enforcement. They need alliances with government. They need alliances with their parents. They need alliances with any caregiver, teachers, whomever. Mm-hmm. We are all in this together to protect them because that is partly why we are here.
Right. Yeah.
We bring these children into the world. And so the conspiracy of silence ought not be in place. That needs to be, that shroud needs to be removed.
Yeah.
And again, I believe this book is part of that.
I believe so. I believe that your book is powerful in a number of ways. One, in its simplicity, the style with which you tell the story is very, very creative, and the imagery, obviously the book is well designed, the pictures are fantastic, but the imagery jumps out at you and you immediately can, I don't care where in the Caribbean you're from or where in the Black diaspora or where in the world, you can put that in your village. And mm-hmm. immediately you start to identify characters in from that book, which you have yes. either experienced by actually meeting them or you have heard the stories about. So it becomes yes. very real very quickly. What is also yes. important is that you pull together a number of social issues which kind of, at the end of the day, distilled into this unfortunate action, in this unfortunate occurrence for this young lady. And I want you to do this, I don't know if it's possible, but in about as quickly as you can, just give us a broad overview of the story so that when we jump into it and start to pull out this point, the listening audience can kind of really understand where we're coming from. You know, as quickly as you can.
Sure. I have where that would be useful is the blurb that I have at the back of the book, okay? Where it's an 11-year-old girl, Haley. Her world is being turned upside down when she learns that her best friend, Cree, is a victim of child abuse. So despite the obstacles along the way, Haley knows it is up to her to ensure that the person responsible for hurting her friend is made to pay.
And she's determined to do that. Now, what I
she's
want
determined,
to,
yes.
What I want to do, so Haley is, for the most part, the biggest mm-hmm. hero in the book, right? But there's some other heroes, obviously. One who I like very well is Aunt Nina Ocasio, who is
yes.
an afrocentric and very well-rooted, educationally-oriented individual. So you have Haley and you have Cree, who was the victim. He was raped by Uncle Warren. And Uncle Warren, the perpetrator, is a churchman. Well-respected and well-liked, right? And I'm going through this because I want persons to start to kind of build up this. There's the mother and the father, meaning Haley's mother and father, who are very protective. When you read the story, when you read between the lines, it eventually came out, you know, who they are. Then you have this individual who I think I want to use to represent most of us, right? Not that we are nosy, but there's Miss Enid. Miss Enid knows everything that goes on in the community. But she does one thing which is critical. In her knowledge, she doesn't want to be involved and she doesn't say anything. Even though in this story, in the end, she fesses up and helps the police. But Miss Enid is the nosy person who knows everything. And then, before we jump into these other things, I want to touch on, because you didn't give her much play, but you mentioned her, Tessa. Tessa is Ailey's mom.
No, Tessa is Cree's mom.
Tessa is Cree's mom. I'm sorry.
Yes.
And,
that's okay.
And where I'm going with this is Tessa represents that mother who is out there working hard to do it and hustling and have to run, leave the child and have to go to work. And I want you to talk about how that social dynamic contribute and leads into some of the issues which took place here and how that is actually a true reflection of what we face in our everyday world today.
Yes, and it is in the sense that there are many mothers and fathers, and primarily I would speak to the single mother who is out there having to juggle her home and her life and her work and try to keep her child safe or children safe, try to make ends meet. So she has all of these competing issues that all are important. And in this story, why I didn't give Tessa that much play is because Tessa is working and leaving her child with Haley and Haley's auntie.
Yes.
Because as we see through the story, Haley's auntie is the safe place.
The ebb and the flow. That's a safe
place. The ebb and the flow. The ebb and the flow. The ebb and the flow, exactly, that water imagery. She is, Haley's auntie Nina has the bookstore where the children go. So Haley was on her way over to Cree's home. They and this is where she found out what happened to Cree, or Cree divulged it. And they were then going to go to Auntie Nina's store. That was the plan. So Tessa knew. She actually waited until until Haley got there before she left for work. That was what I intended.
Right. And so
I'm trying to show the village concept.
Right.
Auntie Enid is part of the village. That we ought, we need to reinstate the nosy neighbor, someone who is watching at all times.
Right.
We need to have that bystander who's prepared to say something.
Yeah, but I think you also crack open some of the vulnerabilities that is presented, or at least some of the exposure which is presented because of the necessity of a busy mom to leave the child, because there are some gaps. There's some time in the moment when she leaves the house with two children there, and then they would move to the ebb and the flow. But let's come back to the mother. This would be Ailey's mother and Ailey's father, or Ailey's parents, right?
Ailey's parents.
Yeah. In the end, I discovered through the reading that they were very protective for a reason. And the reason they were protective is that they knew, or at least suspected, that Uncle Warren was. But they protected.
That's right.
They protected their own child with in a vacuum of silence, and that vacuum of silence created a vulnerability for somebody else who may have been informed and on guard if somebody had spoken up.
It created a vulnerability, yes. And again, that was done, written deliberately to indicate that this is what happens in our societies. We cloak the perpetrator.
Mm-hmm.
The lady who would have been raped by the uncle and then subsequently had children for him and left the town,
right. Mm-hmm.
She too did not report. She left.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess for the reader, and again, as I said to you earlier when we chatted, it is for the reader's imagination to understand why it is that the mother, after being so traumatized, you know, why did she choose not to say versus to say something? She mm-hmm. chose, why did she choose to leave? It is for the reader to glean that themselves. I leave a lot for the reader to use their imagination to understand why the characters are doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
The mother of those two girls wanted to protect them. That was her first interest.
Yeah.
That's what I intended.
Two and girls therefore, which turned out to be his children, actually.
Which were his children.
Mm-hmm.
And so she moved away, moved up north. And so since she didn't report it, and the implication was that the sister and sister-in-law and his brother did not see the rape, were not privy to the information then that right. would have allowed them to report. They then protected their own family.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't allow him to be around Haley
alone
within the house.
Yeah, they would trail behind him and make sure that they're always in earshot, or at least always have him in sight.
Have him in sight.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. And you know, I think you know, you did you know, kudos to you. You did a wonderful job with this book.
Thank you.
The initial look, especially when you look at the illustration on the cover, it looks like a child book. Right? You would get the impression that this is going to be a simple read. And it is. It can be read by a child. But I think an adult, I'm reading it from an adult perspective, it mm-hmm. quickly became complex to me. Or at least it quickly suggested to me that there were additional complexities which I could either get into or start to, as you say, use my imagination. And I think this is one of the value of this book, because it doesn't only represent a story which is suggestive, it represents a formula which is instructive.
That was the intent. And as you see, and thank you for highlighting that and for gleaning that from the book. I want it to be used as a tool mm-hmm. for both children and their caregivers and parents and adults. And so, as you see at the end as well, I go through the different types of touch, the different types of trusted adult, because our village is getting smaller.
Right.
Who do we trust now with our children?
Nobody.
Nobody, it seems.
That's just me. That's
nobody.
Just me.
They have to be vetted and proven. And even then, you still have to be vigilant and you have to question your children. And so the only way, sorry, the part of the way, I'm stuck on that.
Yeah,
only.
I know. There we is do no that one all the time. Way. Yeah.
Yes. Part of the way to ensure that the children are protected is to make them more aware as to what to look for,
and
no matter who it is.
Yeah, I think that is so valuable. We're going to take a break here. When we come back on the other side, maybe you want to join us. The numbers are 3232-325-4259, 325-4316, or our text line 422-4796. I'm having this wonderful conversation with Miss Elizabeth Thompson, and she is the writer of a wonderful book, Haley Stems the Tide. And that last three words is what's very important. The fact that we have to intervene personally and collectively as a community to stem the tide of what has become an endemic way of being. This conspiracy of silence, which is continuously wreaking havoc and violence on our youths, on our kids. I want you to join me on the other side. This is Guardian AM. Don't move.
Using your MasterCard prepaid card. Every $30 you spend gets you a chance to win. Whether it's on groceries, gas, diapers, clothes, gifts, online, and others, it's all counting and getting you closer to an unforgettable experience in Miami. Don't have an Island Pay MasterCard yet? No problem. Get yours today. And Island Pay will give you $15 back. Island Pay, a better way to pay. A better way to win. Promotion running March 21st to May 18th, 2022. Conditions apply. Visit islandpay.com to learn more.
Mother's Day is approaching fast, which means it's the perfect time to give your mom the most special gift, your love. Why not show mom you love her with beautiful customized items from Inventive Intellect? Pillows, ceramic mugs, frosted mugs, mirrored photo frames, blankets, acrylic boards, aprons, oven mittens, and so much more. We've got packages starting at only $30. Give Inventive Intellect a call at 676-5811 or 821-9457. We're on Sunlight Cottage Road off East Street North. Do something special for your mom with Inventive Intellect.
It's back. One of the biggest regattas on the sailing calendar. It's the 53rd annual Long Island Regatta in Salt Pond, Long Island, June 1st to 4th. Yeah. The biggest economic boost for Long Island is back with more than 40 sloops competing in the A, B, C, and D classes, along with the Long Island Youth Regatta and the Man in the Boat Sculling Races. Don't miss this major cultural experience June 1st to 4th, the 53rd annual Long Island Regatta in Salt Pond. All of the fastest sloops will be there. Artisans displaying their handmade crafts, jewelry, and straw work. Great food, including the world-famous native mutton dishes. And endless memories all await you at the 53rd annual Long Island Regatta in Salt Pond.
Long Island breeze, your sheep are bleating.
We'll be broadcasting live at the 53rd annual Long Island Regatta with live updates of the sailing results and activities every day. If you'd like to be a sponsor, just contact your account executive or call the Nassau Guardian at 302-2300. That's 302-2300. Yes, it's back. One of the biggest regattas on the sailing calendar. It's the 53rd annual Long Island Regatta in beautiful Salt Pond, Long Island, June 1st to 4th.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Nassau, Bahamas.
And welcome back to Guardian AM. I am your host, Hubert Edwards, and we are here having a wonderful, wonderful, very insightful conversation with a very creative and well-respected author of this book, Hail It Stems the Tide. You know, I've been listening to various radio shows that she appeared on, the discussion, but actually preparing for this show and going through the book and reading it, I can tell you, you know, my respect has gone up tenfold, hundredfold, not simply because I didn't expect that there was a good book being discussed, but the subtleties, the complexities, the ebb and the flow, as one of the places in the book is referred to, is very refreshing. It's easy to read, but there is a lot to chew on. I guarantee you, when you purchase a copy of this book, having read it, it will ruminate with you for a while. And I think if that happens, then certainly it is one of the intrinsic value of this book. Now, Ms. Thompson, tell us, do you have is there a place where people can find your book, a website? Do you have any sort of a campaign or program which is happening locally going on now where person? Because I believe that we must find a way to get this book into the hands of as many in the community as possible can.
Thank you so much for your kind words. Very humbled by that. let me start with the campaign for the children. Yes, I read the book to 66th graders at Ridgeland Primary. And they were intrigued, they were attentive, they were engaged. I have started a campaign to provide them, those sixth graders, with a book each. So there is a website I've set up where I've reduced the price. I'm going to absorb the shipping, but I need those books into those children's hands as a graduating gift, let's say, for them to take home, for them to have, not just to use at school, but to have in their daily walk. And so that campaign, I have a site at payhip.com/HaleyStemsGuide. And if you put in Bahamas for shipping, you'll notice there's no shipping cost, where you can go and purchase a book and sponsor the children. Right now, we've got two people have gone ahead and purchased 7 books. And so we need about 53 more for that class. I'd then like to expand that to all sixth graders. So I'm looking really to make this a national campaign.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hey, don't be scared.
I want to start where my roots are in the Bahamas.
Yeah.
And I would then like to go out beyond to the Caribbean. I have roots, of course, in Barbados, as my grandfather was Bajan. And so I do have some affinity to the Caribbean as well. So I'd love to start, though, with Ridgeland Primary and make this a reality for them before June. And I think we can do it.
Yeah, I believe so. And, you know, this is, for me, very easy to do. You know, to really say to other persons, you know, we call on you. As you know, on this program, or well, not necessarily this program specifically, but on my radio shows, I always talk about, you know, what we do for students, and we try to give back to scholarship and training and so on. And so this strikes really close to my heart, because, you know, if we can educate, and through that education process, we can stop persons from going through the challenges which are reflected in this book, then it's going to be a positive. And I believe that if you're out there, you can find something to make a purchase. We always talk about our take five, and the take five goes simply like this. Take 5 minutes or so to speak positively into somebody. Take $5 or so out of your lunch money for a couple of days, put it together and give it to someone for their lunch. In this instance, you can take a couple of $5, maybe over a week or two period, and buy a couple of books and get them into the right hands. Get them into the hands, especially of students or young people who may be in vulnerable situation. Now, I believe, based on having read this, that you should also buy some books for some of your friends, some of your grown friends. You know who they are. The one who's, you know, they're a little bit challenged. They may be a little bit busy. The single mom working hard. Just create that awareness that think about what you're doing, how you're doing, who's around you, and the possibility of the things that you can do to change your circumstances in terms of protecting your child. Mm-hmm. Back into the book, Ms. Thompson, because we talk about the conspiracy of silence, and we talk about how when we may protect ours in that silence, and it creates a potential exposure for others. But there's an aspect of it where when Haley did that very brave thing, comfort her friend, call on Nina, and Nina believed her because she said it happened before. So it's pretty much a credible thing. Nobody ran her and say, you know, go away with yourself, you're too fresh, like the man did tell her. But you mentioned something which I think is important, and we can extrapolate this as big as we want it to be. After the incident terminated with the police, or after the police got involved, there was a lifting of a tension, if you will, over the community. The community felt free. If we use that as a metaphor for the possibilities of when we get in some level of resolution, how important that is for our communities, for our children, and, you know, not just the people who are impacted, but for everybody.
Well, it creates a more, a less stressful society. It creates a less violent society. Children would feel safer walking to school, which many of our children do. Parents would feel more comfortable sending their children out to family members, to church groups, to other social events, because they know that the village has determined that this is not going to be tolerated any longer. Mm-hmm. We're going to stop this. And we do need to ensure that bystanders are required. I think somewhere in the law, we do need to impact our law in such a way that bystanders are required to report child abuse. And I say required, that there can be some penalty, that if you know, you do have to do something about it. Mm-hmm. And that has to be then taken to the next step of then you need to be penalized for not doing something about it. So there's a whole societal shift that will come about as children are, the value of our children is elevated and we begin to protect them in a real and tangible way.
Yeah, I think that is important, that we start to understand that our actions left untouched, good or bad, mm-hmm. hardens yes. over time. And that's so right. our silence, our inactivity, our turning a blind eye is actually an active process of building a culture or creating an environment which is either going to be positive or negative. In this instance, negative. When we step up, when we step forward, when we contribute to protecting the lives and the well-being of our children and anybody for that matter, we are in fact injecting valuable energy, positive energy into our existence, into our society, into our communities.
Yes.
And that yes. augurs well for the environment in which these young people will grow up, where there is a sense of trust, there is a sense of, you know, we can all coexist and grow up together in a healthy way without having to worry about which uncle is going to touch me where inappropriately.
Yes, yes. And you know, while this story is true to the extent that it happens and it has been happening, there are families where this does not happen. And so we do have those families, those examples in our society. But unfortunately, there is also what has been going on for ages, mm-hmm. Where children are devalued. Children are violated, children's innocence is taken. It ultimately, it lead to other societal ills. It is all related.
Yeah, it's time for a renaissance.
It's time for renaissance.
Yeah, we have a call.
And it's time
on the
for
line.
That village concept.
Yeah, we have a Sorry. Call on the line. We don't want to lose a caller. Sure. Caller, go ahead. You're on Guardian Radio. Oh, the caller is gone. Sorry, we took a little bit long to get to you, but if you wish to call back, then certainly come back. So you were saying we need to
yes,
get
Yes, and I agree with you that it's time for a renaissance.
We have to have a regeneration.
Yes, yes. And that village concept needs to return, where we feel empowered to say that I saw something happen to Cree right away, as opposed to sitting amongst ourselves and whispering quietly, so-and-so. You know, we need to be empowered in that and not made to feel ashamed or to feel as though you're doing something wrong by, exposing the perpetrator, no matter who he may be in society. And I should say he or she, because there are women or females who also abused as well. But primarily mm-hmm. we're seeing it's a male-dominated action, unfortunately.
Yeah. The aunt, right? I think easily after Ailey, my favorite character in the book, Aunt Nina. Mm-hmm. Aunt yes. Nina would say to the children and encourage them to look within, to look
yes.
for the light, make sure that they look for the light within themselves more than so in a building. As really a way of building and developing a consciousness of love yourself, know yourself, value yourself, and therefore give yourself the confidence to operate functionally in a society which may be dysfunctional.
Yes. Yes. And so she was building, by saying that, she was building up their confidence, giving them the right or the freedom to be themselves, yeah. Not having them depend on someone else to come and save them, so to speak. So in this instance, that message was honed in, you know, or was brought to bear on what Haley did, because we see that Haley did not waste any time. As soon as her friend told her, she had her moment of doubt, because she knew how, you know, she loved this uncle, and he was a very well-known member of society.
Losing you.
And, you know, she wondered if her friend could be lying. But then that statement that he made, too fresh. She had heard it herself, being, referred to her.
Yeah, because, it was said to her.
It was said to her.
Let's take Ms. Thompson. Let's take her quickly. Yeah. Go ahead, Carla. Carla, you're on Guardian AM. Go ahead.
Can you hear me? Hello? Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Hi, morning. How's it going?
Good, thanks. Mr. Edwards, are you there? Are you able to hear?
I can hear. This is Elizabeth?
Yes, it is.
Okay, this is Tennille calling.
It's going well.
Hi, Tennille.
Hi. How you doing, Howard? Hubert, sorry.
I am hearing her.
Isn't having the best reception, so I'm Tennille. Just
going to... Yep. How are you? Okay. Hello? Are you still there?
I'm here. Did we lose the caller?
Yeah, I think so. We just went down. Tada, if you can call back, then certainly jump on in. I also want to use Auntie Nina as a proxy, Ms. Thompson, where she was obviously Haley's favorite. But it said that she was lovely, regal, and with a welcoming presence. Isn't that really how we need to put ourselves in the stead of all adults? When children see us, they need to see us as a welcoming and safe presence in order for them to feel safe and comfortable in society, isn't it?
That's correct. And so she... In her, I depicted her as that safe space. Mm-hmm. And that safe space then has to have positive aspects to it.
Right.
And so she was the auntie who would listen. She was the auntie who was well-read. She was the auntie who would bring treats. She was the auntie who would bring them books about their ancestors. She was the auntie who would tell them about their history before slavery interrupted it. Mm-hmm. She was what an auntie should be. She was what an elder should be in the society. And so, yes, I gave her the name Nina, after Nina Simone, and a Kosua, born on Sunday in Ashanti. I chose that for her as well. And a Kosua primarily because on Sunday she was absent.
Yeah, and she was absent on church for a reason, a very fundamental
reason. For a reason. Yes, she was absent from church for a reason.
And it had to was tied intricately to the fact that this individual was a perpetrator, and she needed to be at a place where she continues to create a safe distance space.
A safe space.
Just in case persons need it, right?
That's right. So the ebb and flow, not only was she the individual safe, but her space. The Ebb and Flow Bookstore was the safe space.
Yeah, the place that these kids were being sent to, that place, not knowing that they were being sent to safety.
That's right.
And I think in many ways, there are persons out there who may be needing us. They may need a Liz Thompson, they may need a Hubert Edwards or someone, but when they look across the fence, are they seeing us as being lovely and regal and kind and giving persons who they could be confident represent a safe harbor, and they would be willing to send their kids there? We have a caller again. Caller, go ahead.
Hi, this is Tanil calling back. So sorry.
I go ahead, Tanil.
Y'all all right?
Yeah, man, we good.
Good, good. So I wanted to congratulate Elizabeth. I have the book. It's a little bit triggering as a survivor of molestation, but it's definitely something that we need. Yeah, and we're having a press conference tomorrow at Parliament Square. It marks the 6 months since baby Bella passed.
Okay.
So we just want to let people realize that we won't rest until children in the Bahamas are better protected. We have so many instances of everything that you guys are talking about, incest, molestation. And we just want you to join us at 9:30 on Facebook Live. If you can, make it out to Parliament Square in person. Parliament Square is opposite Rawson Square, right where the buildings are.
Okay.
But yeah, I just wanted to congratulate you, and it's such a timely, and the book itself is really a very useful tool, I think.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you.
And thank you so much. You know, we had the opportunity to speak with you. You told your story. You have been very forthcoming. And I think persons like yourself and Liz Thompson represents a place that we should look to as we seek to grow a greater and more gentler society. So thank you for your call, Tada. We are totally out of time. Liz, only 1 minute to go. So I give you a quick wrap up. Ailey's Stem the Tide is a very, very wonderful book. Everyone should get it. Your last words.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Hubert, for having me here today. I also want to thank you on behalf of the children who are being violated, who have no safe space. I want them to look to agencies and to Bahamas and to Neil. Folks who are working with them, Denise Major, just try to find those adults and safe spaces where they can be free and they can be healed. And so I appreciate this so much. I can't tell you how much this means to me and to this work.
Thank you so much. And we will end because we have this African flavor go to. I will end you with my Ubuntu guide. This is our Ubuntu guide in two sentences. Be strong, be bold, and be wise. Carry the weak, support the timid, share your wisdom, and bear the bruises with dignity and honor. It's a privilege. All that's left to say, get the book, walk good, stay good, one love and Ubuntu.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau.